Next matter for argument this morning is Holt versus Regional Trustee Services Corp., 56479. If parties are ready, they may proceed. Again, please state your name for the record and also if you wish to reserve any time.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Roderick Carucci. I'm here representing Francis and Carl Holt, the homeowners, the appellants in this case. It's an honor to be here before you today to argue this matter. I ask, with the court's permission, to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I might. The facts of this case are quite different from the previous case, and I'd like to back up out of the trees and look at the forest as a whole. The legislature 2 years ago enacted AB 149 in response to a crisis, a foreclosure crisis in the state. This matter goes far beyond just Mr. and Mrs. Holt. And Mrs. Holt is here today. She's been present for all the judicial proceedings. She's been present for both mediations. We've never seen a writ of a lender. In fact, to this date, we don't even know who the beneficiary is on this note. Even though it was ordered by Judge Mosley in the district court, it was never disclosed. The problem here, and what the legislature was trying to deal with, is the fallout from all of these foreclosures and short sales. Every time we have a foreclosure or a short sale, it creates a downward spiral in our home prices. And that affects, I would venture, everybody in this room, because everybody's losing equity as our home prices drop. And as we have more foreclosures and more short sales, the prices drop further. And it goes beyond even lost equity that each of us experience. It also lowers the tax base. And our property taxes are a major component of what funds the public schools in the state. So what we have is a really big public policy issue here that the legislature, I suggest, was trying to deal with, because we can't fund our public schools. And that's an essential public interest, which this court and every Nevadan should be very concerned about. We need to put a floor under the house prices to stop this crisis. And that's what the legislature was trying to do. It hasn't been largely successful, not because of a lack of intent or effort by the legislature, but because the banks have been very, very successful in learning how to game this system, and they're very good at it.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to ask whether or not you asked Judge Mosley in the first proceeding for broader relief than he granted your clients.
Yes. In the first proceeding, we had a status conference. He ordered the parties back to a second mediation. The lender did not show up for the second mediation. He had retained jurisdiction. We scheduled the second hearing. We appeared for that. And I thought it was another status conference. I specifically requested that we set an evidentiary hearing on sanctions. And he said, no, we're done here today. And he ordered three things: financial sanctions, pay attorney's fees and costs, finding a bad faith, and no certificate would issue. And as far as he was concerned, we were finished. And because that case was concluded, when we were confronted several months later with a second
let
NOD.
Let me pause you there.
Sure.
The case was concluded. You asked him to do more for you than he did, correct?
That's correct.
Did you appeal from that determination?
I did not.
So why isn't his determination preclusive as to the arguments you tendered to Judge Leavitt in the second case, asking for broader relief beyond what Mosley decided was appropriate?
Because there was an intervening later act, another NOD, which was issued 3 months after that case was concluded, approximately 3 months later. And the issue that came up in the prior case, but it's relevant here because there were multiple NODs, notices of default. There is an acceleration clause in those notices of default. Once the lender invokes that notice of acceleration, all payments are brought forward. You can't have further defaults because they have declared all payments due and payable at that time, and if the homeowner attempts to send another check or make another payment to the lender, they will return that check. You can't make another payment.
But you have a right to cure at that point on the notice of default.
Yeah, but not by making one payment.
Not by making one, but by bringing the default current.
That is true.
You have a period, under statutory period.
That's correct.
And your clients did not cure the default when they got the second notice of default within the cure period, correct?
No, they did not. And I will also point out, since it came up before, I checked the notices of default in the file while I was sitting here waiting. And in this case, the amount claimed in the notice of default for the first time and the second time is the same amount. It's $2,345,000.
So they included the prior money as well as the continually defaulting payments?
Both NODs are exactly the same amount.
Okay, thanks.
I don't know if that's the case in every case. It is in most of the cases.
Mr. Christian, did you argue that to the district court that in your request for a preliminary injunction that the notice of default amount is wrong, or they shouldn't have been able to include those other amounts that were the subject of Judge Mosley's sanction order, which you didn't appeal? Or did you ever make that argument to the district court? Therefore, if they reduce the amount in the notice of default, your clients potentially would cure the smaller amount?
I don't recall that discussion being had by any party with the court.
Do you think that's a valid argument for either side or not?
I think it's a valid argument.
The problem I have in this case, and it's probably what Justice Pickering just said, is Judge Mosley enters a sanction order where you agree with it or not. Here's the order. Mm-hmm. You have a right to appeal. The lender has a right to appeal. And then ultimately it comes to us to review whether the judge abused his discretion on the sanction order. Okay, and then we have to rule on it. If it's not appealed, it's like res judicata on that issue. And then, you know, we're back to square one. But I see a potential argument that the notice of default is limited, what they can refile on, to just the amounts that are post the subject of the previous mediation and judicial review. So I'm just wondering if that was squared up at any time.
It wasn't raised, to my recollection. And what we're really faced with here in the difficult decision that all of you have to address is, if it is okay for a lender to blatantly disregard the statute that was enacted by our legislature, there's a finding of bad faith, you file a petition for judicial review, the district court concludes the matter. And what happens in reality today is the maximum sanction a lender is exposed to is something under $10,000 as a general rule, including attorney's fees. That is cheaper for a lender than modifying a loan. That's chump change to the
because case. You can appeal that order and then say the Supreme Court, the sanction's insufficient, the judge abused his or her discretion, and you, Supreme Court, as the final arbiter, have a right to rule on that. Procedurally, that can be done, can't it?
Certainly it can be done. Do you want to see that many cases up here, though?
Well, I mean, we'd like to see one. Maybe we could answer that question, but if it's not posted up, I mean, we can't go out and grab the issue.
Sure.
I think it was Justice Pickering's point here. That's our difficulty, you know.
Yeah, and I understand that. It's a difficult issue to get the right case up here. Mm-hmm. In this case, there's never been an appearance by the lender. There just hasn't been.
And there's never been a certificate issued for foreclosure either, has there?
No, there has not.
And so are the homeowners still in the home?
They are still in the home.
And when was the last payment made?
Probably 2.5 years ago. And I'm not arguing that they should have a house for free.
The lender doesn't get the benefit of going through with the foreclosure until they participate in this thing and there's a certificate that's issued, correct? Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Isn't that somewhat of a sanction?
It's somewhat of a sanction, but if you want the foreclosure mediation program to accomplish the public policy purposes, which was what they set out to do, by merely allowing the lenders to obviate the whole process, participate in bad faith, and file a new NOD, then we really don't have an effective foreclosure mediation program anymore in the real world. And that's the difficult issue here. And I'm not suggesting
by making it effective, are you saying that in those cases, good faith participation requires a loan modification and principal reduction?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
What I'm suggesting is, and you may not like to hear this, but every civil case except foreclosure mediations under AB 149 are randomly assigned in the district court. In the 2nd and 8th judicial districts, one judge gets every single one of these cases. And every lender, because there are a limited number of attorneys and law firms that handle these cases for the lenders, they know exactly what those judges are going to do, and those judges are very reluctant to impose significant sanctions. I believe
has anybody ever filed a preparatory challenge to the judge?
That's now $450. Some people do it, but the price has gone up. It's become so significant. You're absolutely, these are people in default.
We know the people who raised that price, too, very well.
So your option to seek a different courtroom is available. And if the foreclosure mediation rules are something that require modification, maybe we should revisit this at either the rule level or maybe perhaps across the courtyard here. The legislature should take a look at how they designed the program.
I think that is appropriate. I believe that the law is...
Which means we're hands off.
Well, no. It means that the law as it's written now needs to be enforced until the legislature changes it, and that's the appropriate mechanism. Consider...
The difficulty I'm having is you had the right to directly appeal Judge Mosley's refusal to grant broader sanctions than he did. We all agree with that, right?
Correct.
And what you want to talk about is that his determination of the sanctions appropriate were wrong. They should have been a broader preclusion by him as to the defaults that were the subject of that first notice of default, correct?
Actually, I believe the transcript, and we cited this in the record, in that particular case, Judge Mosley said, I've corresponded with or spoken with other members of the judiciary, and we have decided that we are not going to modify any loans. And I thought that was prejudging every case. I thought that was
right.
Appropriate.
So my point is you disagree with and to take exception to his statement, yet you didn't directly appeal it.
I did not.
And so that's a problem for us as an appellate court because we're not here. We're here on an appeal from Judge Leavitt's ruling, which denied injunctive relief, respecting Judge Mosley's ruling because she has to respect a prior final ruling of a coordinate court.
No, I don't think that's correct. I would disagree with you. Judge Mosley's case was concluded. A notice of... Thereafter, a new event, which was not litigated as part of Judge Mosley's proceeding, occurred, another NOD. The notice of rescission of the original NOD was actually filed after the second notice of default. So there was never an opportunity to cure. Then the proceeding in the district court was initiated for declaratory relief and injunctive relief, and those were the only claims. And that was initiated solely for the purpose of determining whether it is proper to file a second NOD. So we weren't challenging what Judge Mosley did. We were challenging what happened afterwards because we need clarification on that.
But do you agree with Mr. Hafter? You were here for his argument that as to the fresh defaults that post-date the conclusion of the proceedings before Judge Mosley, the lender's free to proceed.
I disagree with that unless the lender follows the procedures set forth in the promissory note to, using bad grammar, unaccelerate the note. That note has been accelerated. All the payments have been called forth. There are procedures by which...
But you have 35 days, don't you, after the recording of the new notice of default and election to sell to cure. They're not accelerated for the 35-day time period, and that may have been increased under the statute recently, but I know it was 35 days for years, so isn't that true? So the time you get a new notice of default and election to sell, you have an absolute right of 35 days to cure without an acceleration taking place.
I'm not
place.
Sure the second note in this particular case, or the second notice of default was appropriate, because they didn't rescind the first one.
Okay.
They rescinded it after
the Did you argue that to the district court?
Yeah.
You did?
Pardon me?
Did you argue that to the district court? The first notice of default wasn't rescinded, so the second one wasn't appropriate?
I believe I did. I don't remember if it was orally argued, but I believe it was in the pleadings for sure.
Okay.
Are there any further questions?
May it please the court, Donna Osborne and Chris Benner on behalf of Respondent One West Bank, as well as Regional Trustee Services. Your Honors, I believe you've already addressed some of the most specific issues. I just wanted to highlight some of the other issues that we have, is that the district court had to apply, Mr. Pacrucci is trying to apply the five-star standard. that this has to be the same case in controversy, that the parties were substantially the same, and that issue and claim preclusion should apply. I'd like you to look at BAC Home Loans versus the 8th Judicial District Court, Your Honor's opinion, that with regards to a petition for judicial review, no due process is awarded to lenders for service of process because it's an administrative proceeding. We believe the five-star analysis fails right there because it's not a case in controversy. A petition for judicial review is an administrative proceeding. It's not, in fact, a litigated matter. There's no discovery. There's very, very limited opportunity for the parties to actually have litigation on the matter. It's a determination whether a certificate should issue or not, or sanctions to issue or not, regarding a specific notice of default. And, Your Honors, there's nothing new. There's absolutely nothing that either precludes a second notice of default under the statutes. In fact, I'd like to point you to the court's annual report for the Nevada judiciary for the fiscal year of 2010, page 12 of that judiciary report specifically references that if a certificate shall not issue, a lender can start again. And that is, in fact, a motivation for lenders to reparticipate and actually participate in good faith the second time around. So it's nothing new for lenders to assume that a second mediation may occur. It's nothing new for borrowers. It's actually converse to that, to assume that the failure of a certificate to issue means that no second non-judicial...
Does there need to be a rescission of the notice of default?
I don't think an actual notice of rescission of the notice of default is required.
What about the acceleration clauses that were referenced?
Well, the Nevada statutes allow, and the specific terms of the deed of trust, allow for reinstatement of the loan. That's both under Nevada law. Current Nevada laws, you have up to 5 days before sale to reinstate. The deed of trust vary. Some of them say 35 days after the notice of default, but most of them now say, and even this one says, up to 5 days before sale, you can cure. So another distinction is that it's a trustee's duty, not the lender's duty under the deed of trust, to record the notice of default. So essentially you're bringing in a duty of the trustee, obligation under the deed of trust.
But the lender, doesn't the lender sign the declaration of default and advise the trustee as to what the basis is of the notice of default?
Nevada statutes and the deed of trust actually express that the trustee is the one obligated to do that, or someone with authority.
The trustee gets their information. The trustee works for the lender. The trustee doesn't do anything without direct instructions from the lender, and the lender tells the trustee what the default is. True?
I actually disagree in one respect, in that the trustee actually works for both the borrower and the lender. If the borrower pays in full, the trustee has to record reconveyance of the deed of trust. So they act on behalf of both. They are.
Well, counsel, the lender can fire the trustee. The borrower can't.
Correct.
Counsel, if your assumption is correct, then why is the trustee coming forward in many of these cases without the proper paperwork if he's working for both sides? He's breaching his duty if he's doing that.
If we carry this to
the full extreme, that he's in fact working on both sides. I have problems with the argument. I understand what you're saying, but if he has his fiduciary duty to both sides, he's in breach because he's putting forth, in essence, an abusive process, just to be blunt.
And to be blunt with Your Honor, there's many cases where a mediator marks on a mediator statement a violation of document production because an appraisal is 61 days old instead of 60 days old. Yet the mediator's the one that last minute continued the mediation 30 days. There are circumstances where the mediator marks deficiency on behalf of the lender because the mediator thinks that the analysis and evaluation of the loan modification in the confidential brief was not specific enough. I mean, there's circumstances where lenders are having to deal with mediators that are extreme with regards to enforcement of the rules. And essentially, we sit down at these mediations if we can't reach an agreement. A mediator essentially will say, now let me find something wrong with your documents. So in many cases...
Counsel, I hear this anecdotal. It's not part of the record. And to be,
and we were just
be
talking
very,
generally.
Very candid to you, that is not what I've heard in the roundtables. And more importantly... and you should put your ear to the ground. That building next to us, I would advise you not to go in there because that's not what they've heard. And if you state that, they will hand you your head, candidly, because that is not what's being represented to them. So I would advise you to stick to the record in this proceeding this day.
And I apologize, Your Honor. I was just addressing your general question as to a general process of lenders producing documents.
And let's stay within the bounds of what your argument's about this day.
Thank you, Your Honor, and I apologize. Your Honor, back to the actual point on this matter is the fact that a preliminary injunction is the burden of the moving party. It's an extraordinary remedy. It was the moving party's obligation to provide proof of harm. Your Honors, I bring to your attention, how is attending a mediation, a second mediation, with open arms and facing the lender and actually attempting to work out the matter for the first time, even if it didn't happen the first time and trying to do it a second time, how is that harm? How is participating in the second mediation harm? That does not meet the standard of a preliminary injunction. The harm could be after the mediation, and a second petition for judicial review could be filed. At this early stage, before the second mediation actually occurs, to say that no certificate and no second mediation should issue ever, I believe, and we've argued in our briefs, would be a modification of the contract and violate both the Nevada Constitution and U.S. Constitution, as argued in our brief.
Did I understand it correctly that the lender didn't attend either the first or second mediation in this case?
That is correct, and those issues were addressed to Judge Mosley and were briefed before him. The very first mediation was September 4th of 2009. That was the very first week that mediations were ever conducted in the state of Nevada under the brand new statute. Mm-hmm. Judge Mosley took that into consideration, that can be excusable. The second one, there was evidence before Judge Mosley that One West and the trustee had hired counsel to attend the mediation. It provided proof that the attorney was paid, but the attorney didn't show up, yet One West was waiting on the phone for the mediation. These were facts that were considered by Judge Mosley when he determined what the appropriate sanction would be. And that appropriate sanction he determined was payment of attorney's fees and costs and no certificate shall issue.
So your position is then if the borrower is not satisfied with that, they appeal that sanction order to the Supreme Court?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Okay. And that, in fact, at this stage, that instead of using the mediation program as a shield, the borrower was attempting to use it as a sword. And, Your Honor, I don't believe that was the intent of the legislature. We have to consider the public policies of that. Mr. Crucci brought up public policy reasons as to helping this economy get back up on its feet, and he did blame lenders. And I would like to let the honors know that, in fact, right now, lenders are not lending. One of the reasons could very well be this mediation program. They would lend otherwise.
Also, would you stay within the record of what is before the court? Because we're getting into a public discussion that is outside the scope of what has been argued.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And as for this particular case, there is no reason that a preliminary injunction should stop the parties from sitting down and attempting to mediate this matter. And if in fact an agreement cannot be reached, a petition for judicial review could be filed.
And would one of the issues theoretically available in this second mediation be accommodation of Justice Gibbons' concern that the amount to cure, the notice of default, might indeed be different given Judge Mosley's first order? So that issue would be on the table. It's not before us in this setting. It is rather something that might occur later.
It is something that can always be considered at a mediation level where it's an agreement by the parties. I don't think it can be enforced by this court because the Holtz did not appeal Judge Mosley's sanction order.
And the only issue, though, that was asked for Judge Leavitt was to declare that there shouldn't be a third mediation.
That is correct.
And they wanted to enjoin a third mediation, and she denied it, right?
That is correct. She found that they did not meet their burden for a preliminary injunction. A- Again, Your Honors, I would just point to the five-star test, that it hasn't been met in this matter. The issue and claim preclusion cannot be the grounds to issue a preliminary injunction of a second mediation on a second notice of default. There was no harm, and there is no case in controversy that had already been litigated. So if you have any other questions.
Any additional questions?
Thank you.
Counsel, you're down to a minute 33 on the clock. We'll put time back on and give you a full 3 minutes to wrap this up for us.
Maybe I should clear something up. When the Holtz appeared for this second court appearance in front of Judge Mosley, and he entered his order, they did not take exception to his order. They didn't have any desire to appeal. They were satisfied with that order. They would have liked to, and we requested a hearing to modify the loan, and he said, we're not doing such things. They didn't have a reason to appeal. What came about in the second case in front of Judge Leavitt dealt with strictly the issue of another NOD. Now, Ms. Osborne came before you and said, well, we don't see why the parties can't sit down again. And I think the timeline here is instructive because we don't even to this day know who it is we're supposed to be sitting down with. The original mediation notice to appear, which is page 267 in the appendix, no beneficiary is listed. Yet the foreclosure mediation rules require that be disclosed by the trustee within 10 days after receiving the election by the homeowners.
And you brought all this up in front of Judge Mosley. You aired it all right in that petition for judicial review, correct?
Not all of this. This
oh, okay.
This,
so where did this come
not,
from?
We're talking about what is in the record on appeal to the Supreme Court.
From the denial of the injunction.
That's correct. I mean, Judge Mosley was aware that we didn't know who the beneficiary was because he specifically ordered, in his November order,
mm-hmm.
he ordered that, and that order is, I don't have that number in front of me, but he specifically ordered that the identity of the beneficiary be disclosed. It was not. And
a little bit of difficulty with what you just represented, that the Holtz were satisfied with what transpired in front of Judge Mosley. In your opening remarks, you said that the Holtz took exception to his statement that he could not, that he did not believe he was free to impose a loan modification, and that he rejected your request for a loan modification. And on the record, he stated his opinion that his letter of certification meant that this lender could proceed with a second notice of default and election to sell. Given all that, if indeed you did not take exception to any of that, then why are we here?
Because his Judge Mosley's order said no certificate will issue. The lender, whoever that undefined entity is in bad faith. And that was the essential finding. Nothing could proceed, according to AB 149, nothing could proceed further beyond that. And unfortunately, our statute isn't complete. It doesn't tell us what can happen after that. It probably should, but it doesn't. And that's really why we're here, because we don't know.
Mr. Chief, what's the status of this latest notice of default and election to sell? I know we're up here, but is it proceeding along?
No, it isn't. It's stayed. There was a stay signed by three justices of this court.
Okay, got it. Okay.
So
theoretically, there could be a third mediation and on this, or you could request that, and depending on what happens here, and then require the lender to produce the documents showing their ownership of the loan.
Correct. In fact, prior to filing the district court action that's on appeal here, they did file a notice of election to participate in mediation for a third time because I deemed that an appropriate and cautious thing to do because we didn't know what happens.
And right. Didn't Judge Leavitt, in fact, order that occur, a third mediation?
She ordered something slightly different. She didn't order that the foreclosure mediation program continue and handle a mediation. She specifically ordered that Keene Ellsworth, who was the mediator the first two times, conduct a mediation within 30 days. And Keene Ellsworth wasn't a party. He is a mediator under the program, but he wasn't an appropriate party subject to the court's order.
Thank you for that clarification.
Well, we thank counsel on both sides. This is a area of first impression. We appreciate the spirited arguments that came forward this day. It gives us something to think about. This case is now submitted. We're in recess until 11:30 when we have the last item on calendar, again, as to foreclosure mediation. Thank you.
All right.